Hello, my name is Brian Novoselsky, and welcome to the Over the Counter podcast. Today, we are joined by Richard Dion, Pharmacy Clinical Program Manager for Clinical Surveillance and Compliance at Wolters Kluwer Health. Welcome, and thank you so much for joining me today, Rich.
Thanks for having me, Brian. I'm looking forward to speaking with you.
Awesome. So today, we're going to be discussing the growing challenges in opioid therapy management, the pharmacist's increasing role in opioid stewardship, and how health systems can utilize collaborative programming to boost patient outcomes and improve safety. So really, to start us off, Rich, how would you explain the current environment regarding the use of opioids for pain management today? Kind of start there.
I think we're in a really interesting place. Over the last few years, the rate at which Americans were dying from opioid overdose has really started to drop quite a bit, but it's not back to where it was before the pandemic. The rate has, kind of decreased a bit, but we're still seeing, pretty unacceptable numbers. So I think the role for opioid stewardship and reducing harm from those medications still remains, incredibly paramount for care teams and for clinicians to be a part of. So, I do think that's changed a bit from a regulatory perspective, especially for hospitals. There's also been some major changes the way that the organizations that manage that are kind of providing new guidelines and standards around opioid stewardship and pain management. They've basically done away with some of the metrics that or national patient safety goals that previously would have given more prescriptive ideas around how you would manage that and instead focus more on a whole centered or a whole kind of patient approach in how patient pain is managed and how those medications are used safely and effectively. And it's more about allowing organizations to describe and define their own ways they're managing to meet those criteria without giving them a more kind of line item approach doing so. So I do think that's led to a lot of organizations to develop some new standards and practices around pain management. And I totally agree with the idea that it should be patient specific and patient focused rather than meeting metrics that may or may not be related to improving the quality with which patients are being treated, making it about the patient at the end of the kind of discussion and really, I think, the most effective way to do it.
Awesome. Yeah, perfectly put. I think that's a great way to kind of start our conversation. I feel like, this is a great conversation to always revisit. And it's something that's kind of well known within, healthcare and even outside of that. But little things and kind of behind the scenes, like you mentioned, those standards, those little things come and go, and they're good to kind of rehash for pharmacists and just people in this space in general. So we'll definitely get a lot more into kind of the pharmacist role and a little bit more of what's going on and what's been happening in this opioid space. So moving to communication and healthcare unity within this space, in what ways do factors like inadequate monitoring and communication gaps between specifically pharmacists and physicians, how does that hinder effective pain management?
It's a great question. I think there are gaps in different sections of the care profile or care environment for a patient, particularly in the hospital. I think a big one exists in the gap in which time and attention by a clinician, specifically a physician that's managing a patient that is the hospital, has to devote to pain management. Unless you have a very specialized pain service, and most organizations may have someone who does that or a group of physicians who manage that, but they're typically being used for more specialized or more unique cases where patients need really unique or kind of maybe even potentially invasive pain control measures like epidurals or nerve blocks, things like that. So pain services aren't always often or really kind of pain services aren't typically engaged for day-to-day patients who are just receiving, maybe oral therapy for pain, but that doesn't necessarily mean they don't need that kind of attention. So I think having a devoted person or group of providers that can kind of offer that sustained guidance around pain control really makes for an effective pain management situation. And then also utilizing pharmacists in that discussion as often as early as possible, I think makes for a very kind of complete and very comprehensive care package for those patients. So that's one gap, is provider attention and provider availability. That I specifically speak around kind of physicians and maybe nurse practitioners who can write those orders. So I think that's one gap. Secondary to that, I do think there's still a gap in some places for a pharmacist to have a role into that care. So, smaller hospitals, kind of critical access hospitals, pharmacists don't have the time really or the availability to lead the pharmacy and go up, check on a patient who might need pain control or talk to them, be involved with the care team and they're writing those pain orders. Or those orders might even be kind of, third tier as far as attention goes. So I think that's also a gap, is trying to engage other clinicians beyond just the ones writing orders really can be helpful too. So that's a big one. And then another gap is also just lack of data. An organization I work with, the Wolters Kluwer Health team, we have a pretty comprehensive package, software solutions that allows for the identification of you know, real world and, you know, kind of real time metrics for using opioids like MME scoring and identifying patients. But a lot of providers and the care systems they're using, EMRs, don't offer the tools to allow them to have the data at hand to even make decisions that are helpful. A lot of providers may not have an MME score in front of them that allows them to understand how potent the patient dosing they're getting. There may not be a tool to identify patients at risk given the other medications they're receiving. So I think, do think that data and the availability of kind of clinical tools that utilize it is really also a gap in this process.
Awesome. Yeah, perfectly said. Yeah, I really appreciate you laying the groundwork for both, you know, pain management in general. You know, all these, obviously so much has happened and improved, but I feel like there's always going to be these gaps and things to address, but also in the opioid space, kind of what's going on and kind of like marrying the two. And we'll definitely kind of tackle a little bit of both sides for the pain management and opioid. Cool. So kind of looking at opioid therapies for pain management, what are the most prominent challenges among health systems when it comes to the effective management of opioid therapy specifically for treating either acute or chronic pain?
So I've heard a lot. You go into that question could be its own podcast in and of itself, but I do think kind of boiling it down to the most distilled version would be, you know, really think organizations have to have some level of leadership, attention, and advocacy for pain management programs. If you don't have someone at the top who can help get resources in place to manage those patients and pain in general, then you're really not going to ever have an effective program, or it might be piecemeal at best. So having a leadership person who really can go to bat for you as a group will really be helpful in that process. Also, best practice models, I think, are key, and that, you know, includes things like order sets and clinical practice guidelines for pain, and making sure that those are integrated into care plans, into the electronic medical record as much as possible to really kind of, I don't know, for lack of a better word, really kind of idiot-proof it, right? Why give them lots of opportunity to make mistakes or kind of had wide variance between pain control models when we should really just be using a standardized approach as much as possible. And then if you do need help beyond what's standard available, or if there's a patient that's requiring some pretty heavy needs, maybe that's where you engage a clinical team that is more kind of seasoned or experienced with doing pain control in those situations. I think that goes back to having leadership commitment too. I do think that stacks. If you have someone or a care team that can do pain control rounds or with, you know, consults, that's also set up by having a leadership team that allows that to happen. So I think those two kind of build off each other. And that also kind of ties into physician availability. If they're not available or have the time to dedicate towards that, they're not going to be available. So I think engaging models that take not just physicians into account, but also other providers like nurse practitioners, physician's assistants, pharmacists, even pharmacy technicians to help doing, you know, check-ins or pain scores with patients really can be helpful. And then the biggest challenge, again, kind of going back to what we said before, is about, you know, data availability. So not just real-time data for patients who are admitted to the hospital, but also, okay, what are our long-term opioid prescribing practices look like? What's our duration of therapy? How long are patients receiving those opioids when they're admitted to the hospital? And then how much are we giving to them? I think when patients start getting lots of medications in the same class, when they're going on and off medications, it'd be kind of hard to kind of collate that data and really understand what prescribing looks like. And that's also across multiple systems. Patients don't just engage with one EMR when they're admitted to the hospital. They oftentimes end up with a system in the ED, another system when they go to the OR, and then they come to the back to the medical floor. Maybe that's another situation where there's kind of disparate data systems. So I think having that kind of complete data model is also really helpful.
Great. Yeah, very well put. I appreciate you really touching on all the kind of nuances within, you know, a health system and kind of how they exist within this pain space. Yeah, like I think you did a great job of touching on all the nuances and kind of the systematic, you know, challenges and maybe like the needs kind of in the space and what a lot of healthcare leaders. I'm glad you also started off with kind of the leader aspect of, you know, pushing these programs and kind of initiatives forward, because it really is the people that drive these things forward.
Right.
Awesome. So now I really want to get into kind of the opioid stewardship part of this all and then kind of look toward the future and wrap this up. But can you just like talk about what opioid stewardship is and how pharmacists can really get involved?
Sure. And again, I think as we've moved away from a more kind of stringent and line item approach to being defined what opioid stewardship is, I do think it's being more kind of approached as a part of the pain management program, and that pain management program includes the safe and effective use of those medications. So I do think the kind of definition we're using will be continue to be kind of evolved as we move forward. But it is, you know, in general, to distill it down, it's a hospital-wide effort to reduce opioid overuse and also misuse. So trying to treat a pain effectively while simultaneously kind of reducing the risk of having patients potentially develop a misuse problem after discharge, especially for inpatients. So what that looks like is, you know, identifying patients who are on opioids, de-escalating those as early as possible, and or potentially including non-opioid based medications for treating pain as early as possible. So rather than just giving someone opioid early in the process during their stay at the hospital, maybe it's an opioid plus acetaminophen or plus ibuprofen, or if we've got nerve-based pain, maybe selecting another agent that treats nerve pain beyond just an opioid. And so making sure that we're using them as judiciously as possible and reducing it to really the most, minimal effective dose for an opioid, right? So really just using as little as possible to control pain. And also having, I think, another part of that is also, and I'm kind of getting going around here a little bit, but also understanding how that affects patients' expectations around pain too, is setting realistic goals for pain control in situations and making sure that patients are aware of what those goals look like, not just kind of saying, hey, this is what your expectation should be, or not even addressing it. That's really important. So yeah, like I said, it's that effort around the hospital. It's the leadership program, making sure that there's a champion inside of the leadership group to make sure that the pharmacy has what it needs to support that. Additionally, pharmacists tend to be a really kind of key driver for opioid stewardship because of their knowledge and expertise in how those medications work and how to use them effectively. So that's another part of it, is making sure that pharmacists are frontline in that process as much as possible. You know, so I do think one level of interaction with the opioid stewardship program is also academic detailing. So it's not just telling providers in real time, hey, I think this order is incorrect or inappropriate, or, you know, I think it's time to discontinue this medication. It's also like, hey, you know, here's the data for the patients you've treated with opioids over the past 6 months. Here are the outliers. Here's where your duration of therapy for opioids in average compares to the rest of your peers at the organization. I think those real world discussions can really help drive an opioid stewardship program forward. But that's also, you know, predicated upon the idea that there's a clinician, pharmacy department, or group that feels comfortable speaking with physicians about that stuff. And that does go back to kind of like hierarchy and leadership, making sure that there's someone on the team there that does help, you know, kind of foster those interactions without it being kind of adversarial, if you will. So academic detailing can be really challenging if they're feeling like they're in a punitive measure versus, hey, we're just trying to understand the process and really kind of drive care and quality forward. So, you know, again, going back, it's leadership, it's pharmacists being involved, it's using data to teach and to advocate and educate providers. And then, you know, the overarching goal here is, again, not to try and reduce pain treatment or like, you know, people need to be suffering. It's using as much as possible or using it as little as possible in order to support patient needs while simultaneously making sure that we're not overusing. And I think that's really what it comes down to, really just kind of making sure that we're using it as effectively and as kind of judiciously as possible. So making sure we're managing pain and that it's done safely.
Awesome. Yeah. I very much agree with that. I really appreciated that response. You know, kind of for me, like outside of just this conversation, like I love conversations like these because similar to a lot of our previous episodes, so many things within the spaces like these overlap. You know, you mentioned pharmacy leadership, the importance of that, specific things that pharmacists do, like tapering and, you know, deprescribing and a lot of this and the team-based care, like a lot of this kind of overlaps and it really just drives home the themes of pharmacy and, you know, medication delivery and kind of really helping patients improve outcomes on that side of, you know, the grand healthcare ecosystem. So yeah, I really appreciate you really touching on various things within kind of this opioid space, because it's a very important space that everyone's, you know, promoting and trying to gather together to improve.
Yeah, you know, for me, opioid stewardship really kind of speaks to my like background and really kind of what I was passionate about as when I was working as a direct clinician was, you know, really kind of increasing the safe treatment of patients, and opioids clearly are high risk. And so identifying systems that can help prevent patient harm, and also, you know, make providers' day-to-day workflow more effective and more streamlined. It really is where I think that's, to me, that was where the most attractive work I liked to do. Really just felt like I was supporting big practice, big changes that allowed patients to be safer while making providers more kind of satisfied with the work that they were doing. And that really kind of works with it. So opioid stewardship, I think, really speaks to a lot of those things I spoke about. It's just that it really is a very effective way to treat patients and a really effective way to kind of make change at a hospital organization.
Very much so. And it's another one of the many perfect examples of like this work. Essentially, it's all
it's only ever going to trickle down to the patient. And that's like the most important aspect of healthcare. So kind of just got two more questions. I'm going to get into the weeds a little bit about opioid stewardship and then kind of look forward to wrap up. So how can health systems collapse siloed compliance workflows into a single connected program to improve clinical surveillance efficiency in opioid stewardship?
That's a great question. I think most hospitals are probably doing a great job of this already. If you look at something like the Joint Commission or even potentially DND, which is another one of the big regulatory compliance organizations, you see that they're already multidisciplinary teams providing comprehensive reviews of their entire hospital experience. The surveyors on short notice. So they're really able to kind of distill down what they're doing day to day to the surveyors and let them know how hospital systems work. And those teams are very effective. They work really well in most cases. They work on short notice. So I think that's a really kind of interesting way of looking at it, is that these teams already come together and exist in a lot of ways. So I think that just repurposing them in a way that allows more of a real-time kind of effective and proactive approach to patients really works well. I think also, you know, the Joint Commission has moved away from a line item accounting of pain management standards. And they're more doing that global view around a patient-centered view of it with National Performance Goal 6. So I think the cooperation between departments will only be enhanced as we continue forward with that. I do think one barrier is probably going to be that siloing of data that we talked about across clinical areas. There's still in hospital systems, even when they use one EMR, there's still data that kind of exists in multiple places that does support practice. So having that on hand and available will be really important. So I think that's a big part of it too. But I do think the one question that hospital systems do need to ask themselves for the most part when they answer these questions is really just about what's actually happening with opioid use at our organization. Do we really know what's happening and can we act on it? I think having a tool that allows them to manage that information, whether it's a drug diversion tool or it's a tool for opioid stewardship or the safe use of opioids, really helps answer that question. And I think that's really what needs to be defined. A lot of organizations with opioid stewardship, I think they're still kind of deciding what their question looks like or how they can best answer it. And I think actually the first step is identifying one thing that you can work on and also make both measure and also potentially and realistically improve. So I do think that compliance collapse also is really kind of around that, is identifying what a single issue you want to work on and then identifying a way to measure it, I think will really be important. I do think the ability to have both real-time surveillance for clinical surveillance and also the ability to look at kind of a collated data system will also be really important for handling that, as there isn't really a great answer sometimes in EMRs, and reports that providers and pharmacists need aren't always easily available.
Awesome. Yeah, perfectly put. I think that's perfectly highlights kind of just the state of, you know, opioid stewardship and how far kind of health systems and healthcare has come and but what still really needs to be done. I feel like definitely like a lot of themes of like the data kind of still needs to come. On the other hand, like health systems and kind of programs have come so far and they are working, whether or not they've kind of identified those questions that you mentioned and are working through right. them. But yeah, definitely like a lot of great work being done, which is also always good to see, but still sure. be more done in the future. So kind of just to wrap this up, I appreciate you really sharing so many great expert insights, but really as healthcare roles and innovative therapies evolve, because obviously there's always going to be something new that comes up in the future. What role do you expect opioid stewardship pharmacists to play in the long-term future? I guess whether it's like 5 years in the future or even beyond that.
You could think about it in two separate ways. So one would be the management of kind of novel agents, if you will, right? So there's new therapies evolving all the time. And hopefully, I think in the era of AI-enabled drug discovery, I do think we're probably approaching an inflection point where maybe things change a bit when you start to see some new drugs at a faster pace than we have in the last couple of decades. So I think that's one side of it. And I do think also systems management and data management will also be, you know, really important too. So I think the first question, like an example is like suzetrigine, right? That's a new medication that's developed, novel agent, supposedly not habit forming, non-addictive, works in a different method or mechanism, excuse me, entirely from opioids. So for a pharmacist, I think advocating for the usage of that medication as early as possible, and also, you know, from a perspective of cost and effectiveness will be really important as always is for a pharmacist. That'll be really important and kind of, you know, a new way for us to combat opioid overuse is, you know, using these non-opioid medications to treat pain. So that's a big one. That said, opiates are cheap and they're very effective at managing pain. So the cheap, effective agents are never going away. They're always going to be around. So do I think suzetrigine is going to be the first line therapy for pain in the near future or a similar agent? Probably not. It's still going to be the opiates. So that role will not change drastically, I think, for a pharmacist. But managing those new agents as they roll out will also be, okay, where do they play a role? Who is our patient population for use? You know, they should be using them. Screening patients for opioid use, I think that'll be really important. Like, understanding, are we getting patients admitted to the hospital who already have a disorder that maybe a new agent might be better for? That's also going to be great. And one thing about that is, okay, the inpatient pharmacist may not have the time to do a screening day to day, but can they use the tools or AI-enabled tools, or if they can use the PDNPs that are available to help identify those scenarios where they maybe could interact and intervene early on a patient, makes for a great situation. So I think using tools that help support that process will also be great. So that's kind of the day-to-day workflow side. I do think data infrastructure maturity will also be really interesting. And, you know, I think as we move away from classic chart review, where you're just kind of digging through the patient's chart day-to-day and looking at what values have changed and what labs and new meta orders they've had, I do think as we get better analytic tools that allow for real-time flagging, real-time risk management, will really help providers and pharmacists become a more kind of complete provider as far as the data they have on hand. And we weren't just asking them to comb through information, was actually providing them with actionable information day to day. I do think also pharmacists will continue to drive metrics forward. So identifying what thresholds and pathways for escalation that are available for patients and providers, rather than just enforcing existing rules. Now, I think also being an advocate for multimodal pain therapy as an organization will also be up to the pharmacy departments. It's really kind of making changes to order sets and identifying providers who maybe need a little education will also be really important. You know, I think also with that, the continued evolution of AI-enabled tools will probably be part of the pharmacist workflow in the near future. I do could see in the next 5 to 10 years, either a large EMR or some third-party systems enabling some more analytic tools that are based off of machine learning that really can assess patients and provide pharmacists with real-time activities they might want to look at, alerts they could really kind of review. So I do think that's going to continue to be a major driver for pharmacists. I can't imagine a situation where in the next 5 to 10 years, most pharmacists are interacting with some level of AI and analytic enabled tool on a day-to-day basis.
Awesome. Yeah, I very much agree with that. Definitely agree with that last point. But yeah, that's all I have for you. I really appreciate you, you know, touching on everything, kind of
sure.
Maneuvering all these questions and kind of the greater landscape of opioids and pharmacist role in it all. Like you said in one of your earlier responses, I think there's a multitude of different topics within just this discussion that we could have a whole other podcast on, one of them being, you know, AI and technology and pain management. I think that's kind of another big one that I definitely picked from. But regardless of that, like, I think you helped us out with understanding kind of, you know, opioid stewardship and really the direction of where everything's going in this space. So I really appreciate you taking the time.
Ryan, thanks for having me. It's really always fun to talk about this topic, and I'm passionate about it and I like to hear about it. And I'm always looking forward to continuing to collaborate with providers who do this work day to day to help them kind of understand their workflow and maybe potentially even enhance it with the software solutions that I work with. So I think that's a really cool topic. And I do think it's the front line of a clear role for a pharmacist in providing good care and reduce patient harm. So it's always passionate and always fun. It's always fun to talk about. So thanks for taking the time to talk to me today.
Of course. Yeah. Thank you as well. Love to hear it. We'll definitely be in touch. Thanks.
Okay.